All right, everybody, hello. My name is Scott Hanselman, and thank you very much for having me. I'm very happy to be here in this country, and not that armpit that I was just in, the Netherlands. I got myself some Coke Zero. This is the good Belgian Coke Zero, not that Dutch crap that they make us drink over there. They told me, come in and immediately insult the Dutch so you'll feel, they'll feel like you're one of them. I don't know if that's true. I felt it'd be better to come and just insult the Americans, and I would probably feel a lot better. So I've got to talk to you for 75 minutes, and I'm very interested in not wasting your time. So I want to make sure you understand that this is the advanced ninja tips and tricks. It's not the basics. It's not ASP.NET MVC 101 introduction. So I'm assuming that you have some understanding of MVC. If this is the first time that you've ever seen MVC, you might have a little bit of trouble kind of following along. I'm assuming that you've at least installed it and maybe run an application once or twice. If you've come to this talk and it is in fact the first time you've ever seen MVC, I admire your coming to a talk called Advanced Super Ninja Tips and Tricks, 300, 400 level talk. Who's here is first time that they've ever seen MVC? There you go. Someone just rose their hand. One person rose their hand. Two, three people. Okay. So I'm assuming that the rest of you either are afraid to raise your hand or you are like professional MVC people and you use it all the time. So you'll feel good. So the couple of you, the first time you've ever seen it, this is not a good introduction, but just kind of roll with it. And if you leave, he's like leaving already right now. He's like, oh, wrong talk. Now I feel bad. See, now at this point, I'm sad. I'm sad for myself. I'm sad for him. But you can't win them all. And he's going to miss that, right? And he's going to miss that slide. And now another person's leaving now. I'm chasing them away with my three circles. I was bringing up the three circle slides because the people, the organizers, told me that I had to have slides. So, three circles. That's it. No more slides. I always bring up the three circles because if you've ever seen an MVC talk, the Microsoft guy usually brings up the three circles as if it conveys some valuable information that you didn't have. That somehow it's these three circles that are going to make you go, oh, model view controller. Oh, God. Thank you, three circles. Wow. Really, really exciting that you've given me that information. So, no slides. This is Advanced Ninja stuff, so let me show you a couple of things that are new and interesting about ASP.NET MVC. I happen to be using Visual Studio 2010 and ASP.NET MVC 2, so we're all running underneath the whole kind of .NET 4 thing. So let's take a look here. Let me see. We've got like our index view, having a view data of message, and I'll just drop into here, and we'll change this script here. We've got our view data of message. One of the things that's nice about doing a talk in an IMAX theater is that this, you know, zooming is really just not appropriate, is it? Everybody see that okay? That is a beautiful screen. I think we're going to all watch Avatar later. All right. I'm just putting a little bit of naughty script in there. This is something that's maybe not been sanitized. It's coming out of the database. We're going to pass that inside of view data, and then we'll bring that back. We'll go ahead and run this. And, oops. Forgot to remove a line there. There we go. And we get that pop-up. Because, of course, I just took that information, that string, directly out of the view data and output it. You've seen this before. You've seen that angle bracket percent syntax. So there's a new syntax in ASP.NET 4. It's not specific to MVC. It's not specific to web forms. It's specific to ASP.NET itself. And you could protect this by going like this, right? Except if you had a really complicated page, you would find yourself doing this dozens and dozens of times. HTML encode, HTML encode, HTML encode. Now, we could do something like that. We could, like, make up a helper function, except you'd still have to remember to put the parentheses around it. So what we've done is we've come up with a new way instead of an equal sign, we put a colon. I'll run that again. And that automatically does the HTML encode for you. And that works everywhere. That works in ASP.NET MVC. That works in ASP.NET 4. I think that for new people who are starting up in ASP.NET, the colons will be the standard way to do things. You won't see equals anymore. The way that I try to remember it is that, you know, they were trying to figure out what to come up with. They were just basically trying everything that they could, just looking for anything that didn't look stupid or like a regular expression. Right? There's a regular expression right there. Now look, see, there's an error in my regular expression. There we go. That's much better. So we needed to figure out another one, and the only thing left was colon. So the way that I remember it is I imagine that you've taken the equals sign and you've shut it like a gate, and you're looking down the side of the equal sign. So I pretend that the colon is a little tiny shut gate, and then I just tell people that that's why we picked it, as opposed to the it was the only thing left to use. This only works on ASP.NET 4, and you'll see why that's significant and important to point out. So you cannot do that in ASP.NET 3.5, and that's significant if you're going to write code that you need to work in both places. You're going to want to think about how you want to do that. So that's one thing to be aware of. Another thing, let's do this. Let's go and make a class, and we'll make a person class. We'll come out here and I'll say prop tab tab string tab tab last name enter prop tab tab string first name tab tab boom. So I've got a person class, and then I'm going to come over here and I will make a person controller. I'm going to say add controller. That tooling right there, that add controller, that's something that was installed with ASP.NET MVC. It's really important to understand what ASP.NET MVC consists of. And one useful slide that actually I'll show you is this one. There is the system.web.mvc.dll that you're already familiar with, and that's what people think of when they point at ASP.NET MVC. But there's also this notion of the tooling. And the tooling are just those dialog boxes and those things where MVC plugs into Visual Studio. So that's inside of an MSI, an installer that runs, and that includes projects and item templates. It includes those dialog boxes that pop up, like add controller and add view. Those things are not owned by Visual Studio. It's important to point out because there is Visual Studio tooling, like when you say file new project and you get a dialog box, that's owned by Visual Studio. When you say file new project, pick ASP.NET MVC and then hit OK, the dialog box that pops up next, that's owned by MVC. Because MVC might rev, it might revise itself in a different order. It might come out, there might be three more versions of MVC, who knows, right, before the next version of Visual Studio. So MVC is something also that you can install on 2010 and on 2008. So this tooling here, when we say add controller, pops up. And I can go and say person controller, and I could, you know, add some action methods. And then I get this nice person controller with index and details and create kind of already started up for me. I can come down here and I can say add view, and we could make, let's say, a details view. I could make it strongly typed. I could pull it down and select person. And then I have a choice of a number of different templates that I could use, and I'll say details. You see that it's actually looked at my person, and it's made model.lastname and model.firstname, because the view page is of type person. See that in the angle brackets there. Oops. You know how people sometimes do air quotes? Do you guys do that? In English, we're always saying, like, yeah, well, do you like him, or do you like him, right? Well, there's like this guy at work who's like the angle bracket guy. So whenever it's something is like, well, it's a view page of T. So we make fun of that guy. We're like, yeah. So I just made a view page of person. And you have to kind of jerk and kind of spastically when you do that. It's important. So I'm hoping to make that a thing now that everyone in presentations will do. Yeah. So this is a view page of person. And you have to make like a little kind of a face when you do it. That means that model is of that type. Model is of type person. Okay? So how did the tooling know about that stuff? How did the tooling look at person and figure that out? And how can we use that tooling to kind of exploit things for ourselves? Let me run over here to the person controller. We'll just make a real quick person. Oops. Person P. One day I'll actually learn how to type, and that's going to be a really great day when I do that. It should be like music, like Jeopardy music, that plays when the demo guy is typing. Dun, 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 dun. So I made a person P. I'll pass that in. This is my details view. And I'll run that. That could come from a database or whatever. Index. Details. Oops. Person. Person details. Okay. The view details or its master were not found, and it's actually telling me where it looked for those things. So it's giving me a nice helpful message. See how it says it wants that in person? I ended up making it in home. I'll make a folder for that. Person. Bring it down there. And then we get a little auto-generated bit of information there. Now, here's a ninja tip. I'm going to go down to my talk here, and I've actually made a little shared search. Did you know that in Windows 7 you can actually do a search and then save it as a search file? This is a search file here. It's of type saved search. So I can double click on that, and actually, you know, you can actually control scroll. A lot of people didn't know that you can do that too. So I'm going to double click on that, and that's a saved search that goes off and looks in Program Files, Visual Studio for code templates. So it just found some code templates here. Okay? I'm going to take the code templates, in this case for C Sharp, and I'm going to do a little draggy Alt-Tabby action. I'm going to start a drag, so I'm still holding the mouse, I'm still dragging, and then I'm going to Alt-Tab over, still holding down, and then I'm going to drop it inside of my project, right on top of it. And then it's going to freak out. And I'm going to click on these, right click, and hit properties. And I'm going to chop out this custom tool here. I don't want that to be used. Okay? And then I'm going to open one of these up. This is one of the greatest things that's hidden inside of Visual Studio. How many people know about T4? Good. So if you don't know about T4, just find a person next to you who raised their hand and talk to that person. Because T4 is fantastic. It's this wonderful bit of code generation magic that's built inside of Visual Studio, and it stands for like Total Text Transformation Terminator. So I don't know. There's text in there and transformation, templating, and then another 4, or T. I don't know. We're not very good at naming at Microsoft, so bear with me. But what T4 does is it has a complete code generation system built into Visual Studio. You don't have to install anything. I think you've actually had this since 2005. Except you don't have pretty coloring and IntelliSense and syntax highlighting. So it's just kind of scary looking right there. I'll show you a way to get around that in a second. But check this out. From here on line 8 to here on line 26, that code block there with the hash symbol is a chunk of code that is going to be running pre-build. That's when code generation usually happens. Except, remember when I went and I said properties and I removed that custom tool? That was my way of telling Visual Studio, I don't want these things to run. I want them to be just sitting there as resources. I want them to be available, but I don't want them to actually build every time. That's why I got that build error. So now that I've done that, these are here, but they're available for another reason. And the reason is these are used by these dialog boxes. So, for example, let's go to details, and I'll say, here we go. This is a good section. That's a chunk of code that's going to run as part of the code generation. And then the chunk below it is going to output HTML, or in this case, a web form view. Then it's going to spit out the key and the value. So I'll just change it so I know that something's actually happened. Okay? Then we'll go back down here. I'll get rid of details. And I'll go details. I'll select details. I'll hit add. So now it's changed. So the way that the code template stuff in ASP.NET MVC works is that if you don't have a code templates folder in your project, it'll use the one that's in program files. So it'll use the one that you don't have to do anything about, the one that's already there. But then if you copy it locally, it's going to notice that you've basically overridden those choices. And it's going to use that one that's local. What this means also is that I can make my own. I could go and take like details and hold down control, drag it, drop it. Call it like awesome details. Come down here, add new view. And then it's right there. This is incredibly powerful stuff because this means that you can then distribute your projects throughout your company or throughout your open source project without having to require the users to install anything. It's just going to work. T4 is already built into Visual Studio. Think about the kinds of controls or the things that are specific to your business and how you might want to change the way the default details or list is done. If you find yourself doing something twice in programming, automate it. You only get one task that is tedious. If you find yourself saying add new details and then every time you change it, you only get to do that once. The second time, come up with a way to automate that. So if you prefer like a jQuery grid or some MooTools list view of some kind, or however you have at your company have decided that your views should look, ship that with that project so that other programmers, junior programmers, can take advantage of that tooling. You can control not just the views and how the views get generated, but you can also control how controllers get generated. If you're using dependency injection or inversion control or specific things, or your controllers come from a base class of a certain kind, you have complete control because it's inside of T4. Now, this is kind of scary looking because it's just black text, and we don't really tell a lot of people about T4 because you can see that the tooling is not really kind of 100%. But in Visual Studio 2010, you can do this. You can say tools, extension manager. If you haven't seen this, this is pretty fabulous. And you can go to this online gallery. Finding add-ons and things that extend Visual Studio are easier than ever now. Go to this online gallery if the internet is working here. What's happening? There we go. And scroll around, and here we go. T4 editor, free T4 editor, download. 3K, look at that. See how fast that's going. This is going over X modem, I think, right now. This is pretty slow. I'll entertain you while it's going, because I know how... And now I'm lost. Install. All right. We'll go ahead and just restart Visual Studio there. Hard drive. We'll bring up our TT, and now I've got syntax highlighting, got that subtle yellow, if you can't really tell, but the code blocks are highlighted in yellow. And this is a free tool from a company called Tangible, and then you can spend a little bit of money and get IntelliSense. There's also another product from a company called Clarius Consulting that's a T4 editor. So you can see that they've really kind of elegantly extended Visual Studio in a really easy way. Suddenly I express interest in T4, and now I can do this. T4 is incredibly powerful, and that's why ASP.NET uses it for all of its tooling. And then remember that nugget that we were talking about earlier and how that only works in .NET 4? This is kind of neat. This is the little bit of code generation code that makes the details view, and it actually detects whether or not you're on framework 4. If you are, it picks nugget equals colon, as opposed to line 22 where nugget equals equal sign. And then it'll put HTML in code or not, depending on whether or not those templates work that way. This is a kind of little bit of snippet of code that you can use when you're making your open source project or your framework or your enterprise application, and you can make it so it'll just do the right thing. Now, this T4 stuff, remember that I went properties and I chopped out that custom tool area there. This T4 stuff is not being used at build time. It's just sitting there. So when you hit build, nothing happens. It's only used by that dialog box that pops up. But there are some interesting things that we've got some people looking at that you can potentially use that are involving T4, except they use it in the more kind of classic way. And there's a fellow named David Ebo, who works for the ASP.NET team, who's doing this really cool thing called T4 MVC. So I'm going to pick up these two files, this T4 MVC and this T4 settings file. I'm going to bring it back over here and then just drop it in my application. I'm dropping two files in here. And the T4 file suddenly has stuff underneath it. So he did that generation just by virtue of the fact that I dragged that file over there. So the idea is this. He's running around programmatically inside of my project in Visual Studio. So he's actually using the Visual Studio automation APIs to poke around and see what I'm doing and then provide value. So what kind of value can he potentially provide? Let's drop over to our default index here, and we'll just grab, let's grab a picture. I've got these penguins. I'll take the penguins. I'll drop them into content, pick my penguins up, drag them in here. Check them out. Bam. And penguins. Oh, too big. So now I'll make all of the CSS people cry. This is like when your mom does HTML and she's like, this is how you resize a graphic? Oh, cool. I'll just copy my 5-megapixel JPEG up online and then I'll say width equals 250 and it resizes. Isn't that great? Wow, HTML is magical. So I've got these penguins here, except, oops, I got a misspelling. Is the compiler going to prevent me from compiling? I mean, I did get a nice squiggle there. Got a couple of warnings, but I'm going to turn those off because if they really meant anything, they'd be errors, wouldn't they? If they really mattered. So it runs, right? It looks like it's great. There's nothing wrong with this application at all. Would any automated test pick this up, right? Would even Selenium or Watton or Water or any kind of, nothing's going to detect that this image is broken. So what David's stuff does is this. I know it's a giant screen, but I can't help myself. As a formerly blind individual who had eye surgery, I have to make it visible for the blind guy in the top row. So you see this here? What he's doing is he's introspectively looking around at all of our stuff, and he's making these nice statics that are letting us get to our information. Nothing's changed, right? They're still strings. It's still magic strings. But he's making the kind of the power of the compiler work for us. In this case, I'm just showing what he's doing with static content. So here we've got, I need to get like a comb over at this point. Here we've got penguins, we've got site CSS. You see above that, you've got all that JavaScript. Now, if I misspelled something, I could potentially break the build. I could know ahead of time that something went wrong. So maybe I could go over here and I could say, whoops, right? But if I hit build, it still worked. Build succeeded. Well, when is it going to break? It's going to break at this point, because that's when the view gets compiled. So the T4 stuff's a trick. The T4 MVC stuff's a ninja trick. Here's another one. I'm going to go over to the Solution Explorer. We'll pin that down. I'm going to right-click on the project, and I'm going to say Unload Project. Now it says Unavailable. See? I'm going to right-click on that, and I'm going to say Edit. And that's going to let me open up the CSproj. And then I'm going to come down here where it says MVC Build Views. I'm going to mark that as true. So now it's actually going to build the views. And now I'm going to hit Reload Project and bring it back. Then we'll go back here. And we'll build the thing. It's going to take a little longer now because it's actually building views. And now I get an error. So now the compiler is working for me. Yay! That's great. Wow, that's amazing. Thank you, Scott. So that is called T4 MVC. And that was actually added recently to MVC Contrib. It used to be up on CodePlex, but now you can go to mvccontrib.org and you can check that out. And it's really significant because even if you don't like just what I've shown with this content thing, the technique that David is using in here to look at the interop work that he's doing to talk to Visual Studio, and he's not just looking at statics. He's also, let me show you the generated code. He's also taking a look at all the other strings that one could potentially want to avoid. So, for example, when you say something with a view, like, let's look, actually, home would be probably a better example. There we go. Different times when you might refer to some views and have to put in, like, view, quote, index. Anytime any string can be inferred, he buries it inside of here, so then you can remove that string. So then you can do things like redirect to view and then use constants. Or you can say return view quote index. You don't have to say quote index now, you can say constants dot index, and you can get names of actions, you can get names of views, all the stuff that would ordinarily be late bound and you wouldn't actually find out about until it broke. So he gives you that flexibility. So I think that's pretty interesting stuff that that David Ebo is working on. And it's really, really easy to add to your project. You can take existing projects. Now, here's another thing that you can potentially do with this. And I think this is pretty clever. He's got this settings file that he keeps all of his details in here. And here's one. Add timestamps to static links. This is a really useful thing. Add timestamps to static links. So now, when he builds, and I do a view source to take a look at that link to the penguins there, oops, make sure that I generate, close that, and make sure that this gets generated. Do-do-do. He'll add a timestamp at the end. Where's my penguins? You ever find yourself just like blowing away the little tiny web server because you don't know why things are being cached or whatever? That's like the number one thing I find myself doing. Add timestamps. There we go. All right, let's try it again. See if I can stick the landing on this one. There we go. So here, all he does is he adds question mark and that timestamp. And this can be really significant, less so for things like JPEGs, but for things like CSS files and JavaScript. You'll see lots of different techniques for doing this kind of thing. They call it cache breaking. They'll add a GUID or they'll add a hash or anything at all to make sure that if that file changes on disk, when you push it out to the end user, that they don't get an error. I have this problem a lot with nerddinner.com, which is a little site that I run. And the issue is someone gets a weird error that I can't diagnose and I tell them to hit Control F5 and then it goes away. And they go, oh, it must have been a browser thing, right? Well, fortunately, whoever that person is who's having that problem isn't smart enough to realize that the error is really mine. No one of your users should ever have that experience. And if that story is familiar to you, I'll just hit Control F5. It's a cache thing. Then it's your fault, and you can fix it with things like this. Now, with Nerd Dinner, I'm not yet using this T4 stuff, although I'm thinking about moving to it, so I just go and do it manually. I just add V equals 5 or V equals 6, but I have to remember to do that, and that kind of sucks. With David's stuff, he's actually picking up the timestamp off the disk and adding it for you. Of course, if you don't like to actually have the real timestamp, you could certainly change it to a timestamp hash or encode it in some way. That's the whole point about the T4 stuff, is that it's text-based, it's open source, and it's right there. There's no hidden DLLs. To use his things or not use them is just a matter of bringing it into your project. So I think that's a really advanced technique that you can use to make your MVC applications more interesting. And I'm really debating bringing that into Nerd Dinner and checking it out. Now, here's another interesting technique. Let's go over here. There was a lot of discussion in the halls about whether someone should pick MVC or whether they should pick web forms. And some web forms people feel that they're really, really productive using web forms, and other people say, no, I'm MVC and I'm equally as productive. And I personally blame the File New Project dialog box for all of this trouble. Because when you do that, it makes you feel like you've reached a fork in the road and you have to decide. It's like when you're coming out of university and like, do I go and become a programmer or a plumber? Right? If I become a plumber, oh, I picked the wrong one. Sorry, you're a plumber. You can never become a programmer now. You only can ever be a plumber. It's like the web forms developers feel like if they pick one or the other that they're screwed. I wish that this dialog box was full of checkboxes. That would be awesome. I want a little of this and a little of that, like a cafeteria plan, right? Sometimes you want tacos and Indian food. I don't know about you guys, but sometimes I do. And here I could say, I want some web services, and I want an ADO.NET data service, I want OData, and I want a MVC, and I want web forms all at the same time. People don't realize that you can have hybrids. So I made this little application here, and I just dropped in Northwind. I apologize. And I thought that I would just show you a couple of things we can do to be productive. I just got the Northwind stuff here. We'll just do some products action. Let's go to list, and I'll say var products. So this is MVC. Var products equals db dot products dot to list. And then we'll say return products. And then on details, we're taking in int ID right there. So I'm going to have to go and get a specific one. So I'll say var product equals db dot products dot where something magic lambda Anders thing d dot product ID. Don't you call it that too? No? D magic Anders lambda thing equals ID dot single. And then I'll take that product right there. You didn't think I was going to get that, did you? So here I've just grabbed a list, and I pass that to a view, and here I grab a specific product, and I grab that to a view, and I'll come over here, and I'll say home controller. Uh-oh, that's scary. Software updates will begin in 7 hours. Ooh, I thought it said 8 minutes. I was like, wow, that's going to make for an interesting presentation. You ever have that thing where it pops up, and it's like, you're like typing and you're like, oh man, I'm coding, man. I'm coding. And then it pops up and it's like restart now and your hand has already moved towards enter. And you're like, no. But it's too late because the energy in your arm. And it's like, you know what you do? You know how you stop Windows? The one powerful application that can stop Windows if that happens. If Windows is like, I'm rebooting and you can't stop me. I'm rebooting. You fire up Notepad really quick, the only application that can stop it, and you just make something. Because only that dialogue can stop Windows from Notepad can't restart. I've totally done that before. I've been like, oh no. Right. Every other application is like, okay, I guess we're shutting down now. Blah, blah, blah. Notepad's like, fuck you, I'm not going to shut down at all. So, little tip there for you, just in case. You clap at that. I got features galore. I got code generation. And you're like, yeah, screw that. But Notepad, yeah. Yes, no, cancel. Yeah, that's very nice, Henselman. You amuse us. Pretty soon I'll be out here dancing for you guys. All right, details. Strongly typed view. View data class. Product. This will be details. Add. See? Generation. Blah, 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 blah. That's nice. And then we'll say add view. And let's make it list. And we'll make a list of product. Add. List, list, list. I always think it's funny when, like, you're making a table of something and the CSS guy in your department is like, why don't you use CSS? Because it's a table. Table. It's okay to use tables when you're making a table. But no, man, you should use, like, the CSS 3 new stuff. It's the box method. It's awesome. That's how CSS people talk, by the way. Yeah, I keep having this thing here. This is the... I've angered SQL Express error. So here I got a nice big long list of stuff, and I can click on details, and I can get details for each one. So, you know, yay, look at me, I'm really productive, and I'm using MVC. But that's what the point is there, right? Do a little bit of work in the controller, generate a couple of views, and you could see how we could make those views pretty. Now, within the same application, I'll just come in here, and I'll right-click, and I'll say add new item. And I'll say web form using master page. And I'll say products. I'll pick the master page, right? And then I'll hit split view. And at this point, I have to turn in my alt.net card because, you know, just even the idea of using the designer and dragging a data grid is enough to be kicked out of the club. And I'm going to grab the entity data source. And I'll drag that, right? And then at that point, I've lost part of my immortal soul. And I'll hit configure data source, and I'll bring up a dialog box, and God, that's unforgivable. And I'll pick products, and then here's where you really get in trouble. Oh, wow, productivity. Wow, can I go home, boss? And then I'm going to hit and finish. And then I'm going to pick a grid view. Magical. And then I'll pick the entity data source, and then I'm, oh, my goodness, wow. No, Satan. And then I will come out of here. And then, oh, no, I'll pick brown sugar, and I'll hit OK. Okay. What are you doing? You're not writing code. You're being productive. So then I'm going to switch over here. Now, here's where it gets interesting. This is our routing table for MVC, and I'm going to say routes.mapPageRoute. Products. We'll say... forward slash other list. Products. Oops. And close it. Thank you, IntelliSense. So I've got my original route, and now I've got this page route here. And then I'll run it. And I'll... What are you complaining about? Physical file, route URL. It doesn't like it starting with a slash. One of the things that's cool about MVC is that when you get a yellow screen of death, it actually tells you something. This is actually a feature. So here's my MVC list, my web forms list. Web forms list, though, gets inline editing, selection, and paging. So that's pretty cool. The point here is that it's one ASP.NET, and it's ugly. I'm sorry, I'm not a designer. But it's one ASP.NET application. I mean, it's like, I think we all kind of intellectually understood that this was possible, but you'd be surprised how few people don't really get this. You don't have to pick one or the other. If I want to go and throw in a little O data and some web services and an ASMEC and some JSON endpoints, totally cool. One ASP.NET application. You guys know CodePlex.com, right? CodePlex is partially MVC and partially web forms. In this particular application that I just made, this wonderfully productive application. Look at my route. That's products.aspx. You don't have to, in ASP.NET 4, show that it's an ASPX page. You don't even need to let them know that it is web forms. Pick the tool that's right for the job. And I really encourage you guys to look more at maybe hybrid applications. Can be a nice way for you to add functionality to existing applications, as well as deciding that you want to learn a little bit about MVC without breaking existing stuff. If you've got a scenario that works really well right now that uses some control from web forms, or maybe an administration section, or a very rich portal application with lots of controls, keep using that. Take a look at map page route. Make those URLs pretty. You can use route parameters, and you can chop things up just like you can in MVC, and you can pass those parameters into the data sources. It's really, really easy to do. So that's hybrid ASP.NET applications. Very, 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 very simple and very flexible. And I encourage people to check that out. Now let's switch over to, route tester. Route tester is pretty cool. Routes can be pretty complicated, and especially when you're making what we call greedy routes. Where's my route tester? There he is. Route tester is an application that Phil came out with. Here's an app with a couple of routes, a bunch of different routes, with all different techniques. So here we've got like foo and bar, which are kind of hard-coded, and then you've got controller action and ID on line 16 there. And then look at line 24. What he does is he has all the routing do its regular stuff, and then at the last minute on line 24, he rewrites all the routes and takes control of them. Okay? He takes over. And what he does is he prints this out. He prints out a little thing that says whether or not the current request matches something in the route. So if I said something like foo/4, you see it matches that first one, but it also matches those last two. A lot of people forget that routes happen in order, the order that they're in. Some routes are greedier than other routes. And they also forget that routes get parsed into these route data hash tables. When you have a route, it gets chopped up like that, and that's how they decide what they're going to call. Now, the example that I made of a greedy route, if we go to Nerd Dinner, we've updated it recently to MVC2, and we've added all sorts of cool features and stuff, and I encourage you to check it out. We pick a particular dinner. Well, internet's a little slow today. Oh, it made it go faster. We've got a dinner with Megan Fox. We are still awaiting her confirmation. Oh, cool. Nerd Dinner, Tech Days, right? I've got my tiny URLs here. A little interesting story here. I wanted to actually get nrd.nr, but I went up on the internet here, and I Googled with Bing to figure out what the domain registry for .nr was, and it's actually the it's Nauru. It's in Micronesia somewhere. It's a tiny island, and the deal is if you go to their registrar site, and it's kind of a time warp into 1985 right here, there's a guy named Frank who lives on the island, and you basically email Frank. Aren't those great clip art there? So you email Frank, and then he tells you that you have to send him $500 via Western Union. And when it arrives in his bank account, he will release your domain name, and I could have nrd.nr, nerd dinner, or nrdd.nr. And I did not want to mail Frank the money at the, apparently, they don't even have an address, because it's Nauru, right? You just go, oh, it's at the Civic Center, right? It's over there. That's how big Nauru is. They have no need for addresses. So instead, I went to GoDaddy, and I bought nerddinner.com for $5. So, fooey on Frank. See how I've got the ID at the end there? I wanted to have a route that looked a little like this. I wanted to say types routes, oops, sorry, dot map route. I make like, you know, pretty route. And I was going to say this, basically, just ID. And then we would have that call. I'll just copy the rest of this line. So I was like, okay, cool. Now that'll just be like whatever.com ID. That'll be awesome. The problem with that is that that is what is called an extremely greedy route. It matches basically everything. So I said whatever.com/foo, and that matches it. So the route tester here makes it really easy to debug that kind of stuff. And you can add constraints. So I can come in here and I can say new, and this is the constraints. I can say ID equals equals, and I put in like a regular expression. I never get tired of that joke. And I can say one or more decimals is the constraint. I want ID to be one or more numbers. All right? We'll run that. I'll put in my number. I put in some numbers, and you see that that matches. But if I put in slash home, it doesn't match. It can be really, really difficult to figure out routing without some kind of a visualizing tool like this. So definitely check out this route debugger. And as kind of with all the things that you find in ASP.NET MVC, the source code's available. So it's really, really easy to figure this stuff out without having to, you can change it, you can modify, you can add to all sorts of things. I would even like to have the routes be added at the end of a page. I think it would be a cool debugger to have that show up at the end. So that's the route debugger, and that makes doing things like complicated constraints and things like that a lot easier. So on Nerd Dinner, let's close this guy down, and we'll bring over the Nerd Dinner. We've got a couple of techniques that are interesting. First, we've got let's take a look at our dinner form. When someone is making a dinner or is editing a dinner, I've got this render partial. I say HTML render partial, and I use dinner form, and I'm reusing that in multiple places. So this is very, very basic reuse. And then when I get there on the dinner form itself, rather than saying HTML.textbox4 or dot, you know, drop down or whatever, in ASP.NET MVC 2, you can use this notion of what they say editor for or display for. Okay? And what this is going to do is it's automatically going to figure out the right control to give you. So here we say title and date and description. And in the description, I knew I wanted a text area because it was long, so I was being a little bit more descriptive there. Let's just run that real quick, and we'll edit a dinner and see what it looks like. Now, the data types at each one of these things in a dinner is very simple. These are strings and date times and things like that. There's nothing particularly complicated going on there. A dinner contains things like titles and the date that it's happening on and things like that. Oh, look, see, it figured out where we are. We put in geolocation recently, too. So we actually learn where you are as well, which is kind of cool. So if we go and do something like host a dinner, you see it made me a text box, and it made me kind of a lame date box. But, you know, I can type in there and goof it up. It's not really an editor for a date. It's just text. So that's kind of not really optimal. And then it gave me my text area. But when you say editor for, what it's doing is it's going and looking underneath the shared folder for special templates that are going to be set up there All it needs is a folder named Editor Templates or a folder named Display Templates. So in this one, I put a one that I remmed out. I just renamed it so it wouldn't be made available. And I called it Date Time. And what this is it's just a JavaScript plugin from jQuery that's going to apply to a text box. Okay? And I put American mode true. I have no idea what that does, but as a, you know, to be patriotic, I had to just be like, America! And I just put it there. I don't even know what this does. I haven't read the instructions, but I noticed that it was false before, so we can't have that. In this case here, of course, I've put in like EN, and it would be appropriate to go and do something like figure out what the current culture is. It would also be appropriate to really figure out what that does, because I really don't know. And then we've got a text box. I'm just going to rename that from rem just to call it date time. And then we'll run that. When it says editor 4, it's going to look at the type, not the namespace, but just the name of the type, in this case, date time. And it's going to automatically replace that little chunk with whatever's in that control. So if we say host dinner now, here's our date time. It formatted a little differently. See? Now we'll go like this. But see, if I had real style, if I was like a real showman, I'd be like this. Oh, yeah. Time picker, too. Because anybody can make a calendar control. But when you add a time slider, then it's like, whoa. So this is actually a control that I found from from a South African guy who put this together, because that whole date time problem is a big problem. That everyone has a time, everyone has a date picker, and everyone has a time picker, but no one's actually done one that's the same. And this was actually was a big problem on Nerd Dinner, because I really wanted to have a text box for dates and a text box for times. But then, how would you do that? How would you bind that? There isn't a system.date and a system.time. So this is a kind of an ongoing problem. And then you've probably seen those forms that have like each segment of the time in its own text box. You know, it's like month, day, year, hour, minute, second, tab, tab, tab. You know, they break them up. There's all sorts of different crazy things that you might want to do when you're bringing in dates. Now, I ended up picking this one because I just think this is great. I love this thing. I've automatically changed every single date time just by doing that. But I can also do it not just with simples, I can do it with more complicated types. So I could come into my dinner and I could say something like, I don't know, let's say if I had public string phone number, except it's still a string, right? I could go like this. I could say UI hint phone. And now if there was a file called phone, it would automatically pick that one up. And then things start getting really interesting, because you can start thinking about the data types that are important to your business and what you could do. You could have like a credit limit, and it might be an integer, it might be a float, but then you could turn it automatically into a slider bar with a jQuery control just by saying UI hint, you know, whatever, limits, or whatever you want. All you have to do is line up that string with the name of the file. So people complain sometimes about web forms versus MVC, saying that, you know, they prefer web forms because it's very reusable and you have that control abstraction, and that reuse is an encapsulated control that you can drag from the toolbar or toolbox and drop it onto a design surface. Reuse is still there in MVC, it's just different. The functionality in this case is mostly client-side, and we're reusing that control, that ASPX control. So take a look at Display 4 and Editor 4, and I'll actually show you another example in the music store. This is a sample application that John Galloway is going to release in a week or two that hopefully will kind of become the new Northwind. Nerd Dinner was cute, but it got bigger than it needed to be. I mean, it's not that amazing of a demo. Nerd Dinner was like two tables, and like everyone's like, yeah, I learned everything from Nerd Dinner. I'm like, no, don't. Nerd Dinner's fun. I'm taking it off in the social direction now, and we need to have a really good sample application that teaches people best practices. So this application is going to be a lot nicer. This music store. Ooh, the curtain of not responding just happened there. That was cool. All right, here we go. So in this one, he's got this music store, and he's added in a couple of things. Like he's got range. So the range of the price needs to be within 1 cent and $100. He's turned on things like scaffold column equals false. And he's put that in album.cs, because this is when we display an album. So then when it comes time to display an album on the details page, he says, display for model. So you can see how this can start to cascade now. His detail page doesn't have a list of types that are tiny, strings and ints and date times. It says display for model, where model is of type album, right? And then album goes and looks in display for model and finds album, and then album itself says, I want to display for the title and I want to display for the price, and then it cascades. And then you can start making radical changes to the way that you display things. You can change calendars and sliders and things like that, but you can also change, you can also prototype very quickly. Remember how earlier when we did that add view and we brought up details and lists, we got ugly but functional stuff. Then you can hand that off to the person that has a little bit more skill, and they can start building it up with the components that they want. They can swap in and out huge sections of jQuery controls and make the whole application look the way they want. One person can focus on functionality. The other person can populate that display templates and editor templates section. Here we've got a separate one, of course. We've got display templates. So for showing an album, displaying it, read-only. In this case, very basic. And then editing an album, a little bit more complicated. Label for, text box for, and then also validation messages. So when we put range there, we automatically get validation for that kind of stuff. Now the validation is built into MVC as well. You can also make custom validation attributes. This is kind of a cool application that plays on Americans' obsession with having everything end in 99 cents. Do you guys have that here? Do they try to mess with you when you go to the store? It's not $2, it's $1.99. Is that just an American thing? Is that a universal, is that the whole universe works that way? My price must end in 99 cents, right? Because I would never spend $9,999.99, you know, that's just 10 grand too much, but $999.99, that's a bargain. So this is a custom validator. What's nice about it is that it's reusable. It's a different kind of reuse, right? It's not the kind of reuse where we drag things over from the toolbox, but I've got an attribute now called price that I can use in multiple locations. And that price validator can sit on anything. We've got our minimum price and our error message, and the error message could certainly be localized as well. And then in the attribute, we derive from validation attribute, and we just get to say whether or not something ends in 99 cents or whether it's above a certain minimum. And then for the JavaScript can be added to a hash table full of anonymous functions. So that price, that name of that attribute price, gets reused multiple places. So that's the key that you're using. If the thing's called price on the server side, we've got the attribute that gets called, and we'll check that on the server side. And then on the client side, we've got an anonymous method here that will automatically apply that validation to anything that's happening on the page. So you get validation on the client side and on the server side. And that's really, really simple and flexible inside of ASP.NET MVC2. Now, one of the other things that we recently added to Nerd Dinner, which is kind of I thought it was a ninja trick, and I'll tell you a little story about how maybe it's not, was I wanted to add support for things like RSS and iCal and make it kind of a little more flexible to get the data out. So I went to nerddinner.com. And I added these guys. I added an RSS feed. I added an iCal feed so I can bring that up inside of Outlook. and then I added an OData feed. Now, the RSS feed is just that. You subscribe to the dinners that are happening, and it'll show you the latest dinners. Now, you've seen before, if you've used ASP.NET MVC, or if you're one of the five people who have never seen this before, I'm sorry, that you have lots of places where you return action result. For example, a dinners controller will do something like details, go and find a dinner, and then return a view, where view is a view result that derives from action result. Action result is that object that everything hangs off of. An action result is the intent to take some action. So you've got view results. If you want to return JSON and do some AJAX, then you use return JSON. This is great. This is one of those examples of like, wow, I didn't know the .NET framework could do that. You know, we have a JSON serializer built into the .NET framework. Takes C# objects and serializes them in JSON. Magical. So here we just say, go and get some stuff, JSON dinners, to list, return JSON. So I like that model. I think that's great. Different kinds of action results. View result, JSON result. So I made a RSS result. I stuck it in a service controller. I did it like this. RSS on line 26 there, go and get the dinners, return new RSS result. Made my own. Right click on that, and we'll go to definition. And it derives from file result, represents a base class that is used to send a binary file back to the response. So this is actually derived from action results. You get action result, file result, RSS result. And this is really cool because if you're going to dynamically generate graphics or reports, maybe you're going to dynamically generate Excel files. I mean, think about all the different things you might need to do at work. Generating CSVs or Excel files, PDFs, RSS, iCals. File results really useful. So I derive from this. I pass in my content type. And then I find out, again, an example of stuff that's built into the .NET framework, that you know we have support for syndication built in. It's been in there for like forever. Syndication item for each dinner. Make a syndication item, each item in the blog feed, add them to a feed, use the RSS formatter or the Atom formatter, write it out. I mean, if you know you're doing good code if it's like 15 lines to do anything. I was like, oh man, that's crazy. Wow, that's RSS result. I was feeling really awesome about myself at this point. And then I went off and I did a iCal result just because I was feeling sassy. And derived from file result, text calendar. I went and I found an iCalendar thing from an open source project. For each dinner, add the calendar, serialize. So I'm like, rock on, I'm awesome. So I call Jeff Atwood, codinghorror.com, the guy that wrote Stack Overflow. And I'm like, dude, you should just check this out. I wrote an RSS result. You guys have RSS on Stack Overflow. You're awesome. How did you do it? I told him all about my solution, how awesome I was. And he said, oh, well, we just made a view. I was like, what do you mean you just made a view? And he's like, yeah, I mean, we just like went into the view and we just like went like, you know, RSS. And then we just like spit out the stuff. So I was just like, what do I do? I don't know what to do with that. I was like, either I'm awesome and you're not awesome, or can we both be awesome at the same time? I don't know. You know, I was having trouble reconciling my hero because this didn't smell right. It didn't feel right to me. But here's the thing about ASP.NET and about ASP.NET MVC in general is that there are always like six ways to do something. And it's cool because Jeff and I weren't arguing about did it work. We were arguing about if it was pretty. And I think that shows that there's a certain amount of maturity to the ASP.NET MVC project if that's the kind of arguments that we have, right? We've risen to like that new level. Like you never hear Ruby people arguing about whether or not it works. They just assume that it works, right? But they're always arguing about whether it's pretty or not. You know, it's like hanging out with a bunch of English majors and they're all writing poetry and like, hey, did you really pick that word? Did you get the? You should get a thesaurus. I think you need a better word. You know, They never argue about whether it's good poetry. They just like, I think you need to pick the right word. There's the Ruby aesthetic. You always hear Ruby people trying to make the code prettier. So here I was having a discussion with one of my programming heroes about which technique was prettier. And he totally thought this was pretty in a pragmatic way. Like, yeah, that's the for him, that was the simplest possible thing. And for me, once I'd seen file result, I was like, yeah, rock on, RSS result. I mean, I could make PDF result. I'm ready to start making all sorts of different results. I think that's really great. And I asked him how he would do an iCal result, and he said I would make a view, and then I would just do it like that. I don't know which one's right, but he's pretty darn successful, and Stack Overflow works. So success as a metric, it's tough to pick. But what's significant is that both techniques are incredibly easy to do. And they both make sense in their own way. So one of the ninja tricks that you're going to have to figure out is that once you learn how to do something in, like, you know, 15 lines, and it becomes trivial to add an RSS result, and it's like, boom, that's it. You know, there's no, like, you know, sometimes the Microsoft guy will show you the demo, like, look how simple it is. And there's like 20, you know, there's like 20,000 lines buried somewhere. No, this is it. That's all there is. That's all that is. That's RSS result. iCal results even easier. It's really obnoxious. I even added whitespace to make it look more complicated than it is. And his RSS thing is even simpler, right? He probably just hands it to the view, and he just spins through, and he makes the models. It's really, really easy to do this kind of stuff. So it's going to be interesting to see how we as a community decide on what's attractive and what's not, and what's reusable and what's not. So be thinking about how you would do those things. Because I think we've all gone beyond the basics in ASP.NET MVC, and we're starting to think about, well, I want to auto-generate some Excel documents, or I need to dynamically make a zip file, da-da-da-da-da. Do I do a zip result, or do I do something else? Personally, I thought that this was a pretty cool way to do it. Okay? So what we have seen so far, we've seen some of the new stuff in ASP.NET, like the colon to make automatic HTML encoding. We've seen T4 being used for the built-in tooling inside of ASP.NET MVC, where you can go add controller and add view. You see how you can go into code templates, which is buried down inside of program files. You can drag it out of there and bring it into your project, then remove that automatic run the T4 every time information from the properties, and then the tooling will pick up the local version. It's kind of a convention over configuration. You notice that we didn't spend any time at all inside of web.configs doing any of this work. Just by virtue of the naming and the structure, everything worked. That's one of the things that you'll find in MVC2, convention over configuration. We saw how we can then take those code templates, and I could give you one of those projects, and you don't need to install anything. It just works. We saw how we can go into the extension manager, and I can bring down a T4 editor without having to do any installations, no MSIs ran or anything, and suddenly my T4 template went from being black to being nice and colorful. We saw how we can use that David Ebbo's T4 MVC and bringing that into our project and having that run as a pre-build step and then enhance the functionality that compilation could give us to allow things to break the build that wouldn't ordinarily break the build. If you don't want to have magic strings in your MVC application, you want to use constants and statics instead. David Ebbo's stuff is open source. It's part of MVC Contrib. Actually, MVC Contrib is now in the CodePlex Foundation. You can take that and modify it for your own reasons. There's a lot of really interesting code in David Ebbo's stuff just for the sake of being interesting, because he's actually solved the problem of how to wander around inside of Visual Studio from inside of a T4 template. Then we've seen how you can make custom attributes to do both server-side and client-side validation. And we've seen how to use Display4 and Editor4 to make cascading, reusable, flexible, changeable componentry within your application, and how I can make one change by the existence of a file like datetime.aspascx and having every date time in my application now suddenly become a really cool jQuery date time picker thing. Anything else? Did I miss anything? Cool. There's a lot of new functionality in ASP.NET MVC 2, but after all that functionality underneath it is going to be even more. So I would really encourage you, if you're into ASP.NET MVC, read as much code as you can. We're trying to put out as many samples as possible. I'm updating Nerd Dinner to use all the new 2.0 features. John Galloway is going to come out with the new MVC Music Store that's going to have a lot of new features. It's going to be very clean code. There's lots of great community projects, like there's CodeCamp Server, and there's Kix, and there's things at MVC Contrib that you can look at. If you want to be a better programmer, you should spend a lot more time reading code than writing code. I feel very strongly that one becomes a good writer in whatever language you choose to write in, not by writing a lot, but by reading more. And I know that I've been reading a lot more source code lately, picking up a tip there and a tip there, and it makes me definitely a better programmer. So I think that's my time, and thank you very much. And I think we can probably take a couple of questions. We've got about 4 minutes here. If anyone has to call, I know you guys aren't known for calling out questions, but if anyone feels that they want to be the first Belgian to call a question out, then that we could do that. And I'll certainly be around to chat afterwards. So you are released if you wish to leave. Otherwise, you can hang out and ask questions for 5 minutes. Thank you very much.